Griff, what's really good, brother?
Nothing much, man. I just want to first of all say that was an amazing story, man. It's inspiring for many reasons, you know.
Appreciate that.
To just segue into it, you know, that's there's nothing better than seeing somebody really go ham like that, man. That's amazing, you know. But I'm good, man.
I want to thank you for your time, man. You've been with us now a couple of hours, and I mean it's been a pleasure meeting you guys. It's really been dope. You're basically KRS-One's DJ.
Well, you know, they picked me up for the tour that's happening right now.
Okay.
I'm filling in for, like, as they wanted to expand the tour and put Sun One, shouts out to Sun One, as the hype man.
Okay.
And then that he was the DJ at the time, so he needed a DJ.
Got it.
And, you know, we're the homies from back in the day. He knows I go back like that, paid a lot of dues, came to a lot of Temple of Hip Hop things, DJed free events for the Temple of Hip Hop community with him for free and all that. And so he was like, I'm putting you on.
Damn, how was that receiving that? Let me ask you prior, because we've spoken earlier this evening, and you've had your rounds with a few MCs. When you get the call from the minister, and he says, "Yo, KRS needs you." I mean, essentially, like it funny, but
well, it was a kind of a funny story because you know, it echoes some of the things minister was talking about over here earlier about. You know, I had quit my job about 2 years ago to really focus on my dream.
Right.
Because I started DJing when I was like 10 years old.
Right.
Have you always been
8 years
thrift?
Old.
Have you always been DJ Thrift?
No.
The moniker changes, right?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I believe in endings. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You need to start, renew, stop something. You know, I read a lot of Carlos Castaneda, and that inspired me to stop. If something's not right,
end it right
end
there.
End it.
And move then, on.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So I've gone through a lot of names. AJ Love back in the day.
Okay.
I played around with the AJ Ski, you know what I mean?
AJ
I had no
Ski
idea why they were
fire.
Calling themselves that in Bronx. But, you
know, right.
You know what I mean? Like, I was just, you know, I went through a lot of things. You know, I had, you know, Cosmo at one time.
Okay.
I was on my space stuff. That turned into Nebula. And Neb.
Oh,
and
he went in.
Wow.
Now I'm ripped, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Because, my life has really been, since I quit, thrifting to stay alive. I'm thrifting records from stores, I'm thrifting clothes, antiques, and that's how I've been able to support myself since I quit my job, and sometimes it's tough, and I was in a spot about a month ago, not even, maybe 3 weeks ago, actually it was 2 weeks ago, and everything was not going right. Cars were breaking down, hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars that we've made busting our butts. You know, not working for anyone else. People are getting sick. Doctor bills are popping up. It was just unmanageable. You know, didn't even have money for food.
Yeah,
and
sometimes.
I just, one night, man, I got to the point where it was just really like desperation. You know, like, what am I going to have to do? I got to go get a job? Oh, sorry about that.
No, it's cool.
Right. And I was like, hell no. I was like, what are you saying to yourself in your head? You manifest this shit. It's do or die now. You're in this.
It's get rich or die trying.
And I was, you know, smoking a cigarette in my apartment bathroom, and it just hit me. Like, I just was like, what am I going to do?
Right.
What do I need to do to make the next level of this happen?
Right.
It's not. You know what I'm saying? And I'm ready for it. You know what I mean? I've been practicing my visualizations.
Okay.
You know, seeing myself out there with hundreds of people, thousands of people.
Absolutely.
And it just wasn't happening. And then all of a sudden, I just prayed to God right there. You know, it was like maybe 1 a.m. My fiance was sleeping on it, and I was just praying, like, please. And then something just downloaded and said, start practicing this energy. I had a dream that night. Start practicing this breathing exercise to ground yourself.
Right.
Because something's about to take off.
Mm.
3 days later, someone calls me up, and I was just like,
wow.
So it's the same thing. It's like I didn't. There wasn't me. It was like there's something about divine
intervention,
destiny.
Okay.
That.
Okay.
It could have happened to me when I was 16 if I was that bold as the teacher was when he was 15 and 16.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? He just had the guts to just go out there and leave and walk the path. Took me 44 years to do that, you know, for real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also living right. You know what I'm saying? Like, absolutely, making sure that I'm living, walking a spiritual path. I'm not getting pulled into all negative thoughts. That could be self-deprecating, because then you manifest that.
Sure.
Right.
And then you don't even know why that's happening to you, and you don't realize because you're thinking these things all the time.
Right.
Right.
So it was just a blessing to even get that call. And next thing I know, I'm on a train, and then we met, and you know, we're here, and here I am now. It's remarkable.
It's a hell of a story. Absolutely.
It's remarkable. You know,
and it's so fresh too, new. It's like,
yeah, right. It's like you know, in terms of my connection with this tour, it's brand spanking new. You know, I have worked things just because I cared about what Sun One was doing. You know. There's people in the community, especially at that time, hip-hop was getting really weird, like in terms of what they were talking about with drugs and just really pushing it. And they always did with weed and 40 ounces.
Right.
And they talked, some MCs talked about cocaine, but now it's like on some another whole...
It's more like from the perspective of the drug user more than anything.
Right.
So you're really listening to dope music.
Right.
And I mean, we understand what I just said there, but I mean, for those that don't, you know, you're listening just to a bunch of junkies that have nothing to say, that are, what is it? How can I put, they're like a bunch of puppets on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's.
Well, and it moved me, man, because I spent so many years really trying not to go that path. And, you know, I was a Fugees head in the 90s, for example, when he was huge. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I was like, what's going on here? You know, when N.W.A. came out in the 90s, I was in the tribe, in De La, and, you know, that was my thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I didn't really understand, because I didn't come from that. You know what I mean?
Right,
but I knew that, you know, I had friends that were into that stuff.
Right.
But they were in the tribe, too. They were in it. And I just wanted to, like, really let, you know, the new generation know that there are people from that school that still care, that are doing things for the community. We're trying to uplift the world and leave it a better place than we came. And that really was my thing for it all, you know. So that's what kind of got me here, was, you know, working with Sun One.
But let's talk about also your history, because I think a lot of people don't know that you've opened up for a lot of people too in the past.
In the past,
you have a really talk about that a little bit.
Elaborate, show off.
Show off a little bit.
Show off.
No, it's not showing off. It's just, it's also part of me being really fascinated by the experiences I had. You know, when I was 13, I started getting into DJing in 1985. Prior to that, I was a B-boy.
Okay.
The first hip-hop song that turned me into the genre was Rapper's Delight. You know, my friend's sister had the 45,
and
she just bought whatever was popping, and one of them happened to be that. We're all dancing. Then I hear Adventures of Grandmaster Flash on the Wheels of Steel in 1980. I'm like, what is this song? A couple people in the neighborhood, shouts out to Grizz, he showed me how to scratch. And then, you know, I became a B-boy and started battling at young age in Connecticut, and you know, my hometown, Middletown. And then I was just like, little by little, we got more into the culture. We, you know, we found the DJs. We learned how it was all coming together with the, you know, the two turntables and the mixer.
Okay.
We didn't even have pitch control back then. We used to have to hold the needle like this or speed it up and do like quick mixes to like learn how to do it until we had a little more money and could buy the joints with the pitch controls
on. Of course, all right.
And that just led me to keep going at it. And we ended up opening up for like was it the 80s, late 80s, or I can't even remember. I want to say it was 87, 88.
Okay.
But it could have been earlier or later, and we ended up, our first show was opening up for Queen Latifah, Digital Underground, Third Bass, and Big Daddy Kane.
Wow.
And it was, you know, I met all of these guys at such a young age. It was crazy. And then, you know, they saw how young I was, so of course they talked to me like, I can't believe you're here. You know, like,
what are you doing here?
You
need to be in the street or something.
Right. You know, they were just like really, like, honestly, it was Shock G from Digital Underground that really, like, he was like, yo, man, that's inspiring to see you that age up here, man.
That's,
you know what I'm saying?
Man.
He really, like, gave me a lot of encouragement. He told me about how he made the Humpty Dance bass line. So I know that story. Damn. He was like, we were just sitting in the studio. They had the beat. We couldn't find a bass line. And by mistake, I took the bend on the keyboard and went, ooh. And he said, everybody in the studio went crazy. He was like, that was a mistake. I wasn't trying to do that. I'm trying to find something else. And they're like, hey, you
made a mistake.
What kind of mistake?
You know, that, you all remember those moments in the studio back then.
Favorite song ever.
Right.
Wow. So from there, it was just like, you know, I knew this is what I needed to do. I knew, you know, this was the path, but it was very difficult navigating through life, and I didn't believe in myself 100% with it.
Mm.
You know, but I DJed some mega, mega massive parties and cut my teeth with in the early days of hip hop when it wasn't popular and everyone thought, you know,
right.
Who are you? You know, it was tough.
Right.
It was
right.
not easy, you know, but again, I'm blessed, you know what I mean? You know, and then I've ended up opening up for so many people. It's like, I can't even believe it. It's like Lupe Fiasco, Snoop Dogg, you know, and a couple times even for the teacher before I was even, you know, really connected with
really?
Son and all that. Yeah, I just got called like, yo, we need a DJ last minute. Can you spin our beats? And, you know, I was like one of the first, we were like one of the first acts on, and we got to stay there, and the B-boys were rocking out and stuff like that. And these are all B-boys that I knew
because
I DJed all these B-boy battles for years, you know what I mean? So it was crazy.
Right.
Opening up for Ludacris was probably the biggest show I've ever done to date. It was
get
like 5,000 people there. Wale was on the bill, too. So shouts out to the West End Blend for that plug. That was a band. They were cool, too. But my whole thing was doing cool stuff, you know what I mean? I just really wanted to do stuff that represented vinyl culture and the samples and, you know, funk and just like hip-hop and you know, I'm into the 45 movement. I did vinyl nights for years for nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like, it's just because it was inspiring. You know?
What's up, man.
But it really wasn't until the past 2 years when I made that true commitment,
right?
That sacrifice, the pain, the struggles, the loss that comes with it, that things started to manifest to the visualization that I was having. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, let me ask you something. We talked earlier at dinner, and I don't know if you want to fully disclose, but you had a plan of what you want to do that relates music, hip hop, to your prior job.
Yeah.
Do you want to touch a little bit on that? Just to let the internet know.
Let's market it because the world needs it. You know, I studied multiple intelligence. I got my master's degree in multiple intelligence.
Okay.
In order to stay a special education teacher in the state of Connecticut, you have to have your master's degree like by your 10th year teaching.
God.
Wow.
So I was like, what am I going to do?
Right.
I didn't want to go back and like study all these bull crap, you know, rote memorization or testing or something like that. Just, you know, I knew how to do it. And I found multiple intelligence, which is this whole education theory based on people have different strengths. Some people are musicians in the classroom. Some kids are artists in the classroom. Some kids are athletes in the classroom.
Okay.
Mathematicians, intellects, whatever, even speakers. Some people just have natural communication skills and they can't do anything else.
Right.
Yet they could rise to huge positions in the world.
Absolutely.
In incredible situations.
Yeah.
And we know countless examples of that in
sure.
society. My idea was to bring those things to at-risk youth because I found those strategies to work and did. We were making beats in the classroom. We were I was teaching them how to play the bass. I was teaching another kid over here on the computer how to use Fruity Loops.
Okay.
And I was teaching another kid over here how to get your lyrics going.
That's wild.
You know, it was wild. It was wild. And it was popping, man. That class, the kids would stop in the door. And, you know, it was to the point where they were trying to say, you're a distraction to the school.
What?
You
see
that shit? They're trying to play my man. He's giving him jewels. And they're trying to shit on his dream.
Mm.
That's horrible.
It was. So but when you're in a situation like that, you could get, it started to wear on me and gaslight me because I was saying that's horrible.
Right.
Other people were saying that is horrible. Then I started to think, I'm at this job that's horrible. Every day. I go home, I've had to deal with bullshit, which I didn't agree with, but I'd have to sacrifice my own principles.
Right.
You lose something else when you do that. You lose your life energy.
Die inside.
Your ability to manifest.
Absolutely.
The vibrancy, as the teacher told us the other night, starts to die.
Life
and
energy.
Right. So I think when we get nervous in life, we feel that something's not right, I feel like you're on the cusp of something really going wrong.
Right.
And if you don't do something radical to shake something up, and you could just kind of fizzle out into just being comfortable with accepting being a pawn. And I didn't want to do that. I just had a higher vision. I knew they were wrong because I knew how these students were responding. So I created my own curriculum.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
How long did it take you
that's wild.
To create it?
2 years. of steady work, so working on it all the time. I have a curriculum for the music.
Right.
I have a curriculum for the arts, and I have a curriculum for creative writing right now.
That's
I still have
dope.
To build it and get to all the other eight.
Uh-huh.
But
sure.
I'm starting with those three, and I'm working with a school right now in Connecticut,
okay.
a private school that serves at-risk youth that have even been kicked out of the regular school.
Wow, look at
right.
that. You see?
And they're all artists. They're all
that's
musicians.
Dope,
they're all want to do
right.
entrepreneurship. They don't believe in what the school's doing.
Right.
And I'm the guy to come in and say, you're right. You can do this.
Yeah.
See, DJ, let me show you how.
Mm.
DJ Thrift you know? Is really DJ the Hustler. Right? That's what's up, man. Listen, that's inspiring. I
yeah.
respect that. You know why?
Because
a lot of youth need that.
Yeah.
As and I said this, and I say this proudly, as a kid that grew up in special ed classes, because they said they don't know how to manage people that are in special ed classes. Stick them with the retards and just leave them in a fucking classroom.
Or
and that's what it is.
They take things personal and start to trigger kids.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Not good. Yeah.
Yeah, they label
it. It's torture.
Oh, you, yeah.
It's torture to the child because then you start thinking, you start walking, you die inside.
Mm.
You feel like you're less of a human because you're in a class that, one, you probably can't switch classes like your friends, or you're in there with people that have real issues, and you look at yourself as that's your measuring stick, and you say to yourself, "What did I do to be in here with that person?"
Right.
And that scars you mentally, because I tell you from firsthand accounts, when people have behavior issues, it wasn't because they were retarded. It's just they didn't understand. The teachers weren't trained properly. They weren't explaining.
Right.
You have to have a certain kind of rapport and patience level with students to be able to reach them so you can have that vibe.
Mm.
And a lot of people weren't willing to do that. So what they would do, they'd treat us like cattle.
Yeah.
In a science class, we'd be doing mathematics. Write some stuff out and just hand it in and see how far you get within the hour. The
right.
bell would ring, you'd move on to the next retarded class, and the process would continue. You see what I'm saying? So that, you're saving lives, man. You're changing lives with that, and that to me is incredible.
I was getting a calling thing. It was like I knew I had to do this. I knew that this new generation is figuring out technology way faster than adults, like at a rapid pace.
Two-year-olds know how to, they know how to move better technology than adults.
Mm.
Right.
That's crazy. My daughter is two. She's going to be two. She knows that if she presses the little button on the iPhone, she knows how it could turn on.
Right.
And she knows if she runs her little finger across the screen, that motherfucker's going to run across the screen. A two-year-old knows how to do that. You hand the phone to sometimes even me, and I'm like, I don't know what to do here. I'm struggling. I got to hit YouTube one time.
How listen, do you do that
How
again?
Do you change the date? How do you set your alarm? How do you do this? How do you do that?
Right.
So kids are, you know,
they're moving.
They're
they
on.
Know. They know. And
they're
so my thing
on.
Is to show them that rather than devalue that,
right.
which is what we got.
Mm.
You're going to be a rapper.
Right.
Instead of devaluing
you're
going
to work at McDonald's. That's what I got all the time.
Yeah.
Of
yeah.
Instead of devaluing that, I'm adding value to that because in this day and age, it's even better than it was for us because with the internet, you have Bandcamp, you have SoundCloud, you have
right.
all these
true.
Internet sites that can generate revenue for you.
Absolutely.
At 13 years old, you can open up a bank account. There's your debit card. A lot of people don't know that.
Right.
You know, I had to research all of this to make sure I wasn't going to, like, have to eat cake and then be like, oh,
right.
you can't make money.
Right.
I found out you can.
Right.
13-year-old can make art and sell it on Instagram. A 14-year-old kid that's a DJ can promote himself through hashtagging, and they already understand this, but so that they can generate followers, which ends up generating
right.
gigs, which ends up turning you into a,
an
influencer, is what they
right.
call
yeah,
it,
an
and then you start getting paid
sure.
for
right.
nothing, just like having lots of people follow you.
And here's the cool thing about that, right? The cool thing about that is that you're being productive, you're being creative. More importantly, you guys have seen on the internet, on social media, where the meme says, stop making stupid people famous.
Mm.
Mm.
You got a bunch of people that don't do shit with their lives, but post pictures of ass, possibly some titties. You know, they might have done a video and sucked a dick or something, and they're famous.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the opportunity. You have these kids, you know, that can they can actually achieve success and make a difference.
Doing something productive.
Make a difference.
Yeah.
So that's powerful.
You know, I'm digging that because there's a lot of people that, specifically here in Florida, that people move to Florida because the homeschooling laws are different.
Right.
They're more flexible and people can actually homeschool their kids. And there's a lot of people that look for curriculums or trainings that, you know, for the kids to follow and do because, right. you know, they're upset with the school system. And now recently here in Florida, mm-hmm. you know, we're recording this about 3 weeks from the shooting that took place at the
correct
at a school here in Broward County.
High school, right? Yeah,
the high school.
Yeah.
So a lot of people didn't even want to bring their kids back to school, and a lot of people are now even thinking and considering homeschooling,
right?
Because you know schools are not safe or whatever.
Right.
But the point is, you know, this type of education where you're tapping into the kids' abilities, natural abilities, talents. They're not going to think like everybody else. These are the people that are, like you said, the entrepreneurs of
right.
the world.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Where do they learn? You know?
They're already too smart for the schools.
Right.
They're bored.
They're bored.
That's
right.
why they're acting out.
Yeah.
Challenge them.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just hanging on teachers that just get their tenureship. Give up.
Wow.
And kids know. It's glaringly obvious because there's always one teacher in that school who's doing it right.
Sure.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. So they know. They know the difference between the teacher that's putting it out there and the teacher that just doesn't give a crap.
Mm-hmm.
They just collect a check.
You know, and how are you going to get somebody to the point where they're going to be a productive member of society, but they believe in themselves?
Okay.
You know, instead of just being a productive member of society, it's just a sheep.
Right.
I want to reach the people that believe in themselves.
Okay.
I want to show you that you can take your family out of this horrible situation you're in the streets or whatever, poverty, stress that comes along with it that the teachers don't want to pardon because they're just like, oh, you're giving them, you know, being light on them. Yeah, but you don't have no idea what this, you know. You can now do this. You can empower yourself to go out there, make a living, and bring your family out of that into something great, better for the next generation.
Wow.
I'm here to show you that you can do that. If you have knowledge about something, you can monetize it for free right now.
That's awesome.
That's wild.
There's a story of a girl, a young artist. She just was born with the talent of drawing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember her name. You guys can research her, but like what you said, she ended up supporting her family at 8 or 9 because she was making portraits. And she was just a natural artist. And they started selling her art on the internet, and it was selling. It was the kid prodigy that could draw. You know,
right.
She did the face of Jesus, and she just drew it. And it was just incredible. You know, famous artists contact her. What's your technique? How do you do it? She's like, I don't know. You know,
it just happens.
It just happens.
Right.
But she took her family from literally poverty.
Mm-hmm.
She basically is the income. She's the income of that house.
Unbelievable.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of children that are in the school systems or in private schools or in charter schools, and parents are thinking, something's wrong with my kid because they're being graded.
Right.
You know,
is the literate, you know, is not speaking on time or. His math is slow.
Right.
Okay, but he could draw.
Right.
Where's the push for that side?
Right.
How come there's not equal weight there?
Right.
Oh, that's he's not. Point. He, you know, he, that's not my kid. He doesn't have any skills. He doesn't do math. He's talking back to the teacher in English class, but he could run a 50-yard dash faster than anybody in the school. Where's the kinesthetic path for him?
Right.
Mm.
Wow.
You know, and that's what I want to. It's already been around, like this theory, you know, it's been around, but I'm trying to bring that with hip hop and urban music and what my experiences are and reach that group of people.
Cool.
You know what I'm saying? I want to reach them and let them know that, like, you've given me this culture, and now it's time for me to give it back to you.
Wow. That's heavy.
Yeah.
That's heavy. That's beautiful, actually. That shit is fly, man. Because, you know, at the rate that at the rate that things are happening, with hip-hop, right? Well, let me say rap music, not hip-hop.
Because,
I mean, we understand the difference between the two. Mm. it's on the verge, like you said earlier, the teacher sometimes has his days where he's like, what the hell's going on? That's disturbing to see a man of that stature, of that, to feel that way. Like, I feel ashamed that he feels that way because of we've let the music go that far. Mm-hmm. And now, it's cool to talk about being a druggie. It's cool about, you know, with the guns and all of the violence, that's always been part of, because that's just, you know, but you're not living that life. You know, you're comfortable with mom and dad. You're not busting guns. You're not doing none of that. You got guys that, you know, the gangsters. Social media's made everybody a social thug now. Mm-hmm. Right? And we've swayed so much from that that, you know, it really takes guys like DJ Thrift and the Minister to actually make that change, be that curve that's gonna save what we love dearly. Because I mean, damn, if it wasn't because we all love hip hop, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah,
we wouldn't have a story to tell. Mm-hmm. And that's everything. We're leaving legacies, mm-hmm, for our children, mm-hmm, and the things that we do. Because obviously, and we all know, it's bigger than us. It's hip hop, mm-hmm, first, and it's not going anywhere, you know. So it's really been eye opening. It's been a pleasure to really been here and be part of this podcast today, because, you know, I've interviewed drug dealers. I've interviewed Croatian daredevils. I've it's been a variety of people I've had on the show, mm-hmm, and I gotta say, this is one of the coolest experiences that I've had, because it's inspirational.
Right.
Inspiration. It makes you want to keep going and pushing. Mm-hmm. Right. So we get the just do that we need.
Right.
That's
Yeah, so I want to encourage, again, everybody, get the Gospel of Hip Hop presented by KRS-One. And I just want to say, Minister, you were there when this was being produced.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you had some influence, mm-hmm, in the book as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I just wanna say, because a lot of people don't know that. And
yeah,
and
I'm in the book. It's I'm recognized as an intellectual and spiritual contributor to the book itself.
Oh, that's
so
dope.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Dope.
I was really grateful that he hooked me up like that. I mean, because we would talk about it, and you know, this is the side that people don't get to see. But you know, this is just, to me, I always find this fascinating, is that, you know, this book is, I don't know, what is that one, 500, 600 pages, mm-hmm, and you know, it's up to like over 1,000 now, the second instrument. He's been writing since then, building off the concepts, wow, and stuff. And
so there's a new version of this.
There's
one.
A new version.
So this is,
yeah.
Is this outdated?
No,
or?
No, you really got to get that knowledge down before,
okay,
the next one.
Because, okay,
the next one only builds off of that.
It just,
that's,
okay,
that's the foundation of it.
So what's the next one called?
Is it the second instrument. This one's called the first instrument.
Okay.
The second instrument, which is, it's that book, but it contains, you know, 400 or 500 more pages of it.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And he's,
okay,
he's got, I can't tell you the names of the other books he's got coming out because it's a secret, but he's got two other books written.
Okay.
Totally different subjects. Hip-hop, but more philosophical.
Okay.
Etymologies on words and things.
Okay.
Very, very needed, useful knowledge. But with the Gospel of Hip-Hop, I like to tell people this, is what they don't understand is, like, when you write a book of that caliber, 30 years of knowledge getting put into the book and stuff, and you're touring, and you're raising a family,
right,
and you're recording albums, and, you know, whatever else he's doing, there would be times where people would be like, well, why isn't Chris getting back to me? I'd be like, well, because he's writing the Gospel of Hip-Hop right now. Well, why is he don't call me? Because he's writing a book right now. Like, you got to, writing a book's different than writing lyrics. You only got to write, you know, a couple 16s and a hook, and then go record it. You can,
right,
do that in an hour and a half, right, but to write a 800-page book, I mean, and that it's good information, and that it's knowledge that's going to be,
right,
useful,
that's
and
valuable,
that it's not just some bullshit. It's like actual.
Right. It holds weight.
It holds weight.
Absolutely.
People don't see that side of it, so they see the book, and like, I saw it because we would, you know, we'd be on a tour, and he'd be like, all right, we're going to be stopping in, say, Atlanta for a week.
Hmm.
And I'd be thinking, great, we're in Atlanta for the week, we'll get this, that, and the other thing, organizing stuff, and hmm, teacher would just be like, this is why he would need us as the crew or whatever. He would go into his room And I remember it would just be funny, you know, he'd be like, we go pick up the food, knock on the door, his hand would pop out and be like, thanks, gentlemen. And then, like, the door would close again. And we'd go for, like, 2 or 3 days without, you know, or whatever, bring in the next meal or, you know, whatever. You know, we'd all go out to dinner real quick, and he'd be out talking, and then his mind would be right back to the gospel. He'd be out there writing it. So he really dedicated a lot of time and energy that he didn't have to.
Of course.
This, and the reason I say he didn't have to is because you're talking about somebody who's successful in their field who, as a rapper, quote-unquote, as an MC, getting honored on VH1 and this, that, and the other, and touring all the time. He didn't have to do that, put the knowledge on. He could have kept all that knowledge to himself,
right.
Maybe made more money, had more houses, more whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He don't live like that. He's a very humble person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'll drive a nice car. He doesn't drive the best car. Often the students will have, you know, the nicest student in the temple, the student with the nicest car usually has the nicest car. It's not the teacher we're driving around the nicest car. He lives in a, you know, a modest house, rents houses and stuff. He doesn't own houses.
Right.
And that book costs thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to make. When you think of just putting up a few people in a hotel room for a week, there's a couple thousand right there with the food and stuff. Let me write this. You guys handle all the business and the work that I can't do. I need to write the book. I need to concentrate
right.
on the book.
Right.
Thousands of dollars went into that book, and hundreds of thousands. I don't even know how to contemplate how much time and energy went into the book.
Because he put this, he came out of pocket. He did this.
That's
himself.
All out of pocket. Now, the printing of itself was Powerhouse Publishing.
Okay.
They put that. We didn't pay for the printing of the book.
Right.
But, you know, he's making, I don't know, a couple bucks off of every book that's sold, you know, a
right.
few bucks. He worked out a good deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, anybody who's got a book printer out there who wants to sell it to us or donate it to the Temple of Hip Hop where we can print our own books.
Absolutely.
That's when the second instrument's coming out. We're going to print up our own books, make our...
Okay.
Maybe we'll have a publisher do it, but we're really looking into getting the Temple of Hip Hop self-sufficient with our own publishing, our own book, you know, so we can start printing it. He's got other books that's ready to come out, you know, and I'm just saying, like, you know, this book is really personal to me because it became my life purpose and my life mission. I really feel like, you know, I joked earlier that if I would have passed after the I got the answering machine message, I would have been happy.
Right.
Parents won't call me answering machine.
Mm.
But really, I've thought about it. I had a near-death experience about 2 years ago. I was driving down a hill. I was driving up a hill in the mountains, and this truck was coming on head-on.
Oh,
and, like, I would have either driven off the side down the mountain.
Oh, you would have smashed right
or I would have smashed into him. And, like, right at the moment I needed, there was enough dirt to pull over, dudes flew by me. And I wasn't even shaken. I found a sense of peace. Like, I really thought I was going to die at that moment. And I was so filled with peace, it tripped me out. That bugged me out more than almost getting in a wreck. I was like, wow, I really
damn.
Felt peace.
All right.
And I had another, you know, when I got in the other, why do I feel such a peace? I was like, that's crazy to say, but I was like, we got this book out in the world.
Mm.
Like, that was an idea. That was an idea that didn't exist.
Mm.
And that's how I know Hip Hop City's going to happen.
Mm.
Because it's the same principle, the same thing, the same belief system that brought that book into reality will bring the temple of Hip Hop, but really, Hip Hop City, Hip Hopia, we call it now.
Okay.
That Hip-hopia. the same
that's real bug.
That
that's
teacher came up with
right
the Hip-hopia.
We're not even ready for that kind of
No, you got to let it sink in.
I don't even know what to
I tell
say,
people
man.
That and seeing how easy it wasn't easy to get the book out. It took a lot of dedication and time, but the belief, and
I want to bring that word up again, the commitment.
The commitment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The willpower.
Yeah.
Yes, willpower in there
wow.
too.
Yo, commitment is deep. I'm a strong believer in commitment.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Isn't that what's wrong with the world today in a lot of ways? Like, all these relationships falling apart. I look at girlfriends I've had and say, where's been the commitment, you know?
Yeah.
Where's the commitment? Because when I'm getting into a relationship, I'm getting into it for the commitment of it. I'm like, I'm committed to this. We can build a life together.
Right.
And it was something maybe we just take for granted of, you know, late 30s, early 40s, that, like, we grew up in an era where, like, that was still a thing.
It was.
Wives and husbands were committed. Families were, people were committed to each
mm-hmm.
other. Where, 2018, it's like, don't commit to anything.
Right.
It's like, why? Like, commit yourself to a purpose, to a movement, to something that really, that is bigger than you. Like we were just saying earlier, it's bigger than you. Commit to that, you know? I think this dojo is a great commitment to that. This is bigger than you and your martial arts skill, your dad and his martial arts skills. Like, who knows how many countless kids have gone through this system. But their mindset was different when they left. They came out and they looked at the world and they didn't feel like a victim when they stepped out the door every day.
Listen, Minister, not to cut you off, I'm going to share a story that he shared with me. And this is how I knew that, just like you said, this was bigger than them. He gave a speech after a class, I believe, right? You correct me if I'm wrong. You remember the story. And the speech that he gave at the end of the class moved a student so much that he found a student in her vehicle crying. And he asked her, was like, listen, he's concerned. He's like, you okay? And what did she say to you when you asked her, like, what happened?
She just said the words that, you know, the words that you said. Every class I give, at the end of the class, I either do a meditation or a short speech. You know, if I have a guest that's here, I have them say something, whatever they want to say. So I just give my everyday theme of the month, whatever it is I'm talking about, and give it to the class. And she said it moved her so much. She said that's what was missing. It was what I said was something that was missing in her world.
Wow.
And sometimes I speak about self-esteem, self-confidence, all the self. Self-esteem, self-confidence, self-control. You know, those I talk about all of that because martial arts has to do with a lot of the self.
Yeah.
You know, so she was touched. And, you know, and there's many times that I come in here. And I've done this for a long time at this same location that I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. But those are the stories that keep me coming to this dojo. You know, I'm like, I have a purpose here.
And that's just the ones you get to hear about. Like,
There's so many that I probably didn't hear.
Because people have a hard time expressing that sometimes, especially younger people, you know.
And there's times that I say, I'm not coming back. That's it. I'm not going in. I'm not going in.
Yeah.
My wife looks at me and she's like, you know, you got to go in. I said, no. I'm going to call everybody. I'm canceling the whole class. We're doing something else. I got to do something else. And something will happen and will keep me here. I've left a few times, by the way. I've left and come back. There's times where I've actually left, you know, I had to leave. I end up, you know, picking up a broom somewhere else, literally, you know, because I don't want to teach. I'll clean. I'll do something else, you know, because I've done it for so long. You know, you get burned out. I think you can get burned out, you know, and I think, you know, I don't know how the teacher does it, you know. I really don't. Cause
it's probably similar to, like, not to put his stuff out there, but, you know, he'll be like, I don't want to rap anymore. I think, you know, people pawing at him all the time, fake people all the time, real people all the time, too, you know, just hearing people's tragedies, hearing their successes, you know. I think the successes and hearing, like, how, you know, he knows it's motivating them, and so that's what keeps him going, but, you know, like, he's been doing it for a long time, you know. He's he's born in 65, so he's 53 now, and like how, you know, and he's been and championing the cause, not just the career itself, but like what you're saying, like teaching people about self-esteem, self-motivation, self-creation, all of this stuff.
Hey, he's a whole movement onto himself. To his credit.
So that's he feels like that too at times. I can say that from experience, you know. You know, and but it's always like, yo, but that's the motivating factor too. Is like, yo, man, I've touched people's lives, and I got to keep going. And you know, he'll run into somebody at a gas station and be like, yo, you changed my life. This album, this song, at this time.
Listen, if I ever got the chance to talk to him like that, I mean, I probably wouldn't let his hand go and name off every song that just blew my mind. It was like, you're the reason why I am hip hop.
And
that's how real that is.
And if he gets to hear this, when we were at the concert, he got off the stage and he took selfies with everybody. Well, everybody that was in proximity that he could. So, you know, I'm like, he's getting closer. Because I was all the way in the back. He's getting closer. I'm like, let me try to get a selfie. Sure, why not? You know? He got really close. I didn't know he was so tall and whatever, you know? So he got really close. I reached out, you know. I don't know, I had this feeling, I got to reach out. Let me touch Kara's one, you know. Let me get some of that energy, you know, because I believe in that.
Yeah.
So I touched him. And I didn't want to, it was like this. I didn't want to let him go.
Right.
You know, it was
right.
like, the minute I let go, he turned around and grabbed me, literally.
Whoa.
And we took pictures. I took the pictures.
That's wild.
And,
dope.
You know, and I always wondered, the thought I had, you know, for those of you that ever read the Bible and studied the Bible, when Jesus was around, you know, people will gather around him. And they would, you know, there was this woman that said, if I could just touch his robe, you know, I would be healed. You know? And I felt, literally, I felt something.
Sometimes
when I touched him, I felt like a part of me was healed. And next thing you know, the events that take place after this.
Absolutely.
Is this podcast.
Word. Word.
A whole evening.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I did not plan. I could have never planned this podcast. You know that.
Right.
You know that. Right. This was not in the plans. We just, you know, we get together.
Yeah.
We see who's going to come.
Yeah.
Nobody comes. Right. We do the podcast anyways.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? We do it.
Yeah.
You know?
And it just so happens that it coincides with the time that you guys are down here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the miscommunication we had with him, I told him, listen, there's a show. And he went to the wrong show.
I went to the wrong show.
He went to the wrong show, right? And he says, listen, I met the minister. I actually went up to the minister and I hadn't seen, we'd spoken through Facebook Messenger. And you know, we went back and forth and it just led to this, man.
Mm-hmm.
This has been awesome.
It's been a real pleasure for
listen,
us.
I want to thank you guys definitely. You know, we're going to wrap it up because we've been at it for a little bit. But before we do, I need you guys to plug all the information where you guys are going to be at, your music, anything you have to, you know, how can they reach you, your IG, if you guys have it, by all means, please let the world know because they need to hear this. They need to be in contact with you guys because you guys have something powerful. So please, by all means, man, where can they reach you at?
Well, they can reach me at DJ Thrift. I'm on Instagram, DJ_Thrift.
Okay.
SoundCloud, DJ Thrift. And I have my own website, www.djthrift.com.
That's what's up.
And you can kind of tie into what I got going on musically with production and DJing.
And for the curriculum.
Yeah.
Same place, or do you want to email
I do.
You?
I do. It's called Mosaics. My company is called Mosaics, and it's on my website, a brief description of it. And, you know...
what's your domain name again, your website?
Thrift.com.
Okay.
DJThrift.com.
DJThrift.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
got it.
Sub, man.
Awesome.
That's what's up. Minister?
Oh, okay. Temple of Hip Hop on Facebook is the way to stay in contact with the Temple of Hip Hop.
Right.
If you're interested in the Temple of Hip Hop, Zinaru. ZIN URU on Facebook.
Okay.
Then I'll keep you posted. I'll get you on the mailing list or our email list or whatever. We don't have a website up for Temple of Hip Hop, but you can go to krs-1.org.
Okay.
And there'll be a little history of the Temple of Hip Hop there.
That's what's
Amazon up. Books or Powerhouse Publishing for hip hop, for the gospel of hip hop.
Okay.
And if you're interested in my music, I've got all my music up for download, or you can listen to it on Bandcamp. It's Zinaru and the H-Law Crew on Bandcamp. Or you just do Zinaru on Bandcamp. But I think Zinaru and the H-Law Crew Bandcamp will be for sure. You'll know that one's mine.
Minister, do me a favor. Spell that, because the internet's at this point, they listening. They probably drunk off of some 40 ounces.
Yeah.
They probably blooded. Break that down for them. So,
Z-I-N space U-R-U.
Okay.
And the H-L-A-W crew, C-R-E-W. Yeah.
All right. That's what's up.
Yeah.
That's what's up, Minister.
So. You know, for people, you know, I just want to say something about the H-Law.
Yeah,
because this book is fire.
Okay.
And you
the
know,
H-Law stands for hell.
That's what I wanted to go ahead.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Say it.
So
say it.
Going, oh.
Yeah. Say
okay.
it.
H-Law stands for hell, love, awareness, and wealth, and that's our only law in the gospel of hip hop. Health, love, awareness, and wealth.
Wow.
Because if it enhances any of those things in your life, that's the direction to go in.
And it does.
And it does.
I'm telling you, I did the health. Today with my daughter,
right,
and we read through the gospel on the health topic right here. And she was digging it. Yeah. This is a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
She was digging it.
Yeah.
She was like, oh, that's why I want to be, you know, that's why I want to eat different. That's why I want to eat right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, we're going to do it. We're
making an impact.
But this teaches that.
Okay.
You know? And it's dope. So that's the H law.
It's H law.
Yeah, H.
Okay. That's heavy, man. Listen, you guys, definitely, internets, make sure you reach out and you support the gospel of hip hop. Get you the First Testament presented by the Blastmaster. You're going to be in concert, right?
Yeah, we've got a concert in Fort Lauderdale on the 2nd.
Okay.
Lecture at Chop Suey on the 2nd as well.
Right.
And then we've got Miami on the 3rd. I'd have to look it up.
No, don't worry about it.
We got 4th and the 5th, too. That's we got up. Concerts 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th, I believe.
Listen, they're staying busy, man. We want to thank y'all so much for appearing on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's been a blast. It's been really one of the better episodes that I've ever been a part of. And that's it, internet. Listen, it's Kick718. You can reach me IG, Instagram, Feuno.
Fay Uno at Hip Hoppers Unite on Facebook.
All right, and we out of here, guys. We want to thank you. Peace.
Peace. Nice.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. Thank you so much.